We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/BlueWire. Just go to Indeed.com/BlueWire right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Heyo, welcome into the CHGO White Sox postgame show, coming to you live from Studio A of our CHGO offices here in the West Loop of Chicago. I'm your host, Sean Anderson. Alongside me, the full CHGO White Sox crew. That is Vinny Duber, our CHGO White Sox beat writer. You can follow him at Vinny Duber. The man in the middle is Herb Lawrence.
Hello.
You can follow him at Eckernwall23, he's our CHGO White Sox community leader. You can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. You can follow the show at CHGO_White Sox. And the early tweeter is our producer, Sarah.
Hello.
Hello. Quick trigger finger.
Yeah, Marco calling you out here for, I mean, the ninth inning wasn't even over and you said, Sox lose.
You know, I could throw someone under the bus, but I won't.
I guess we kind of threw you under the bus.
I mean.
I think we blamed you immediately.
I mean, that's how bad the White Sox are. Sarah's like, oh, they got runners on first and second with one out. Put up the shutout, tweet. They ain't scoring.
It was a very historic night.
They ain't scoring.
The White Sox somehow went 1-for-6 with runners in scoring position. That runner just moved to from second to third and didn't score as the White Sox lose 7-0. And as we posted on at @CHGO_White Sox, and as Kevin Kugler, not Burkhart, right?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, Kevin Kugler kept bringing up, the White Sox have now been shut out 8 times in their first 22 games. You guys having fun yet?
Oh, it's great.
I didn't lose.
It's true. Right? A baseball game that happened in 2 hours and 19 minutes. That's not bad.
As I always say, and I tweeted out, if you're going to be bad at something, be fast at it. And the White Sox are at least efficient. 2 hours and 19 minutes, keep on going. Do it tomorrow. Please.
And do it the day after that and do it on Thursday. Hit that like button like Matthew Ricks is saying. Also, if you haven't subscribed yet, make sure you're subscribing. It's a big week in Chicago sports. Paul has joined us as a new diehard. Sign up to become a diehard today. You do get a shirt of your choice when you sign up. You get access to the CHGO Discord channel as well, where you get to chat with Bears fans, Cubs fans, Sox fans, Blackhawks fans alike, and you also get weekly newsletters from Vinny Duber. He's got White Sox Weekly that came out today, and if you are a diehard, you could check that out. On today's show, we will talk more about the White Sox getting shut out 8 times in 22 games. We'll talk about Jonathan Cannon's second start in Major League Baseball. We'll talk about Nick Nastrini, who just made his second start on Sunday in Major League Baseball and is now being sent down to AAA, and then we might just maybe talk about some Jerry Reinsdorf, some stadium talk, not stadium, the TV channel.
Lowercase s.
But wouldn't it be big S?
Not until it's named.
Okay, that's fair. And then we'll talk maybe a little bit as well about Lindy Ruff. I'll try to work hockey coach Lindy Ruff into the show.
Sabres coach?
Yeah. Well, he was formerly the Sabres coach, and now he's back. So there you go. All right.
Kind of pulling a Tony La Russa.
Well, my thought was, you see this thing where you see a former player in the uniform suited up, and he's a former coach and took them to the Stanley Cup Finals, right? And now he's coming back as their coach. I mean, you guys talked about it. You know, people want accountability for Pedro. Wouldn't that be a great thing for the fans? Kenny and Rick are gone, right? Bring back Ozzie, the former player, the former coach.
Are we doing this again?
No, I mean, I said I think all White Sox fans would love to see it. I mean, Lindy Ruff is the White Sox Ozzie Guillen.
Fred makes the great back-to-school reference. Nicely done.
What is back-to-school?
Oh, my goodness.
It's a Rodney Dangerfield movie.
Mm.
Yeah.
No
where
respect.
He's a, where he's a diver.
Pardon?
A collegiate diver.
Yeah.
Yes.
He was, like, in his 50s.
Yeah. Oh, maybe older.
Rich guy, yeah. Thornton Mellon,
yeah.
Went back to school with his son.
and competed in collegiate diving, and his signature move was the triple Lindy.
Starring America's favorite bully of the 80s, William Zabka.
Oh, okay. I know that name.
And Robert Downey Jr. Yeah. As the son's friend.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Not even as the son.
No.
Oh, okay. All right.
And Burt Young as the heavy. Man. As his driver and the heavy.
Do you guys want to talk back to school? We have.
Okay. I'm not quite sure we have more to say.
All right.
Oingo Boingo's Dead Man's Party was the title track.
That's a good song.
Oh, man. It's a dead man's party. Who can ask for more, Sean?
I would love to get any of these references. I guess I would ask for that. All right. Let's start off with the notes. Before we get into Jonathan Cannon, why don't we talk a little bit about Chris Paddock? Because I brought up the 8.36 ERA before the game, but I also mentioned that in those three starts, he faced the Brewers, the Dodgers, the Orioles, all teams atop of the standings. What would happen, Herb, if he faced a team at the bottom of the standings?
He would look very dominant out there. I thought his stats would be more reflective of he was the aggressor and that his pitchers were actually good, but you know, we've looked and we'll talk about the TJ stats that you brought up. He was all right. He was good, but the White Sox woeful offense made him look like the old Chris Paddock, the rookie year Chris Paddock. The sheriff was actually wearing his hat that day tonight versus the White Sox. He looked like vintage San Diego Padres Chris Paddock. Now, once he goes against another team, I think he'll go back to looking like the guy the Minnesota Twins have acquired. But for one night only, Chris Paddock was back on the bump. It was nice.
I mean, starting pitching right now on this road trip against the White Sox is just feasting. I mean, what Turnbull and Wheeler were able to do with their back-to-back no-hit bids going deep into that game. Aaron Nola quietly gives up two runs and then pitches eight innings yesterday. Mm-hmm. And now you got Paddock with the 10 strikeouts. I mean, starters have a good game plan right now, and they are executing it to perfection. Again, it is one of those things. I'm not just saying that anybody could go step out there. These are good major league pitchers. It takes two to tango, right? But the combination of them pitching well and this White Sox offense hitting so poorly is putting up back-to-back-to-back-to-back really nice outings for some starting pitchers.
And I got to say, too, that how bad is Kenta Maeda? The White Sox batter him around. Well, the guy who batted him around, Luis Robert Jr., but they did get six runs. It wasn't just Luis Robert Jr.
It was the first start of Kenta Maeda's season two. Hey, maybe he was shaking off a little bit of rust, you know? I mean, he was only throwing like 80, you know? Maybe once he gets up to 92, he'll be a little bit more effective. I mean, that was the biggest thing that we noticed from the Stuff Plus stats was the four-seam fastball was a little bit over league average. The changeup was a little bit over league average, and that kind of shows you where the White Sox are. They can't hit league average pitching, let alone anything above that. If they're facing a Zach Wheeler, that's no hitter watch. I mean, truly, if you're going to be facing a guy that has a fastball that, you know, is a 125 or 118 stuff plus, you're going to get absolutely dominated. This lineup is horrendous. I mean, can they score a run, let alone can they force a starting pitcher to throw 20 pitches in an inning? I mean, Chris Paddock, it was 9-for-9. First pitch strikes, and AJ applauded the game plan of the Twins hitters that they were laying off Cannon's low stuff and that they were looking for anything with some elevation, and they were able to capitalize all the time when Cannon was, you know, even dotting some pitches left and right. The Twins were able to put it on the young rookie in Jonathan Cannon. The White Sox really didn't seem like they had a plan. It was so for the best.
Well, and whether they did or not, the idea is that they currently aren't executing that plan at any sort of, you know, success level. And, you know, we talk about it all the time. Baseball's the chess match, right? I mean, this is not just, all right, see who can hit your pitch right down the middle. Like, it's about game planning and playing to your opponent and all that stuff. And the White Sox right now are making it easy on opponents. The offense, certainly, but It allows the other teams to zero in on the opposing pitching, and a good lineup in the Phillies, you know, kicked the heck out of the White Sox pitching the last 3 days. Mm-hmm. And then today, we were talking in the pregame show how ugly that Twins lineup looks on paper because they're missing all their guys due to injury right now. They go out and put up seven pretty easily tonight. They just knew, like you said, Sean, kind of what was coming. Cannon and Nastrini on back-to-back nights. You give major league hitters something to look at, because both those guys were good in their debuts. But you give major league hitters something to look at, and they're gonna figure it out pretty quick.
Yeah, I would just wish the White Sox would do either or. It looked like they were in between Paddock's fastball and his changeup. 96-mile-per-hour fastball, 83-mile-per-hour changeup. Being in between there doesn't work. Choose one. Pick one. Take away, as the Twins did, take away a zone. We're not going to go at anything below our knees. We're good. But that's harder. You know, it's easier said than done. But you have to not look as they did that whole game pretty much, except for the two guys who got multiple hits, and Nick Lopez and Danny Mendick. And somebody's scoffing at Danny Mendick's shining. He made a couple great plays in the in defense, and he was the only one putting bats a ball on that team. So, yeah, it shines for this team is relative.
I will also scoff. I'll scoff at them.
God forbid I make a joke. I mean, every time you read it, you laughed. Every time you read Danny Mendick shines, you giggle.
And I'm furthering the bit here.
I know you are. No, I'm just trying to say, like, hey, I'm trying to have some fun here, folks. Yeah,
he should be
Danny
like
Mendick shines. The White Sox lose 7-0. Chris Paul hits a three and cuts the Suns' lead down to 43. Like, we're playing this game with the 3-19 White Sox, and that's from Grumpy Pig and friends. So it's no surprise that Grumpy Pig is being grumpy,
and his friends too.
I guess. Mm-hmm. I don't know. If you're that grumpy, I don't know if you have friends.
Do they take turns typing the comments?
What's
it? Does Grumpy Pig and his friends take turns, or her friends take turns, you know, typing the comments?
Maybe like backyard football, there's an auto quarterback, maybe because it's a pig and friends. Maybe it's an auto typer. Maybe there's one that can type.
I mean, they just sit around dictating comments.
Yeah, so that's tough to, you know, get the actual letter down.
B-I-G.
Just
enter.
Button mashing.
B-I-G. All right. Anyways, Brett Breen also in the comments saying, I guess that we shouldn't be on the lookout for a Soxtopus. What we are on the lookout for trends that we are watching, obviously White Sox have gotten shut out in 8 of their first 22 games. We'll continue to watch that as the season unfolds. But Herb, this is their 4th straight loss.
Tis.
So now they're going to lose 8 straight?
No, they've lost... to start the season, 4 straight, then a win, 5 straight, then a win, 6 straight, then a win. They're currently on their 4th straight loss, so it's either they tie their 6 and then a win, and then they go back down to 6-5-4, or they go to 7 and then win on Tampa on Friday. So if they just get swept by the Minnesota Twins, it'll be 7 losses in a row.
It feels like it's coming.
And then put all the money on the White Sox winning versus Tampa Bay Rays.
I don't know if we should be telling people to put their money, their hard-earned money on the White Sox to win a baseball game.
Hey, that's the pattern shows. The trend is your friend, as the kids say.
Never heard that.
They do.
Who says that? What kids are you hanging out with?
Children.
Herb, stop hanging out with children.
Stop hanging out with kids. I think the biggest thing with the lineup, and then we'll get more into Cannon and we'll get more into Nastrini. Again, 9-for-9 for Paddock on first pitch strikes, and then they sort of broke through. 3 straight singles. You had Robbie Grossman sneak one through. Then Aloy hit one that was in the infield. Tough play. He was able to beat out an infield single. And then Gavin Sheets, same thing as well. A difficult play for Castro up the middle. Wasn't able to make a play. And the White Sox had the bases loaded. And then Vaughn lined out to Larnach, who made a fantastic diving stop.
Yep. Vaughn stung that ball.
Finally stung a ball. and it was a great play by Larnach. That forced 2 outs. And then DeYoung with 3 straight fastballs swinging and missing, I think on all of them. But it was 3 straight strikes. And the Sox, that was really their only chance to put it on the Twins. And I don't know if it's execution. I know that's been a big talking point about Pedro. And we talked a little bit last week about what can this guy say. What can you say after you've set MLB history for being the worst major league offense in history through the first 22 games?
I mean, the guys know they're struggling. They look at the record. They know that they've set a record for the worst start in White Sox history, and being shut out 8 times is the first time that's happened in major league history in the 22 games that they've played. So they don't need to hear Pedro say a damn thing, but Pedro has to find something. Something that is out of the box, unorthodox, you know, throw something like, hey, tonight, turn the music up. I don't care. We lost. We lost 19. We lost 18 other of these. Did it work when you guys were silent on the 18 other ones? No. Let's have some fun. This life is supposed to be fun, and you going around moping and me, you know, not having radios on doesn't help us. So do something different. If you're going to be doing batting practice earlier, don't do it. If you're going to be, you know, going back to your hotel room and individually going back to sleep, no. Go out and have a party in Minneapolis tonight. I've heard this. Minneapolis is a good secret town to go and have a good time. Good clubs out there. So go out and have a great time tonight. You're a baseball player in your youth. I know that they're feeling bad about this. The season's over. Have some fun. Might as well, because you're going to lose a lot of games. I would just be that way if I was Pedro, because all the rest of the stuff hasn't worked. And so why not?
Well, I mean, and he has done some of those things, right? I mean, he has tried to shake up batting practice, so to speak. Mm-hmm. You've seen him messing with the lineup all over the place. And, I mean, why do you think Danny Mendick's here? Why do you think Tommy Pham is coming, right? I mean, these are the efforts that are being tried. And you might chortle or roll your eyes and say, well, that's not going to do anything. And the realistic is it probably won't make a very big difference at all. But you're right. You got to do something. And and Pedro can only keep, getting all mad and yelling at guys, like, what's that going to do? Like you said, they know.
Yeah.
They know. They know they're supposed to go hit the ball. So, I mean, he's going to say that he believes in what their methods are and that they're going to try to continue to dig their way out of this. At the end of the day, he's not the one swinging the bat. Now, at the end of the day, also, he's the manager of a Major League Baseball team that has only won 3 times in 22 games. That kind of thing continues, and you know what happens to managers who manage Major League Baseball teams that do that kind of losing. So, I wouldn't expect much different in the way that Pedro is acting, in the way that he's behaving. But rest assured, he's trying. Of course, he's trying to do what he can to do this. But obviously, it is not working.
Yeah, we'll talk about them not executing in the plan that they're trying to execute, and we'll even probably bring up Axminster's question about when do the kids play at this point for the White Sox. We'll take a break, and we will talk about those topics along with Jonathan Cannon and Nick Nastrini. Want to let you know though about our friends over at Chevy. Drive home a winner this April after visiting our partner, Ray Chevrolet. They're sharing their best offers of the year. Make your way to Ray Chevrolet on Route 12 in Fox Lake to join in on the savings. As one of the top-selling Chevy dealers in the Midwest, you'll always be able to shop one of Chicagoland's largest Chevy inventories. Plus, you can find the perfect new tailgating vehicle with Caleb Williams coming to town for a limited time off. For a limited time, they're offering 0% financing for 72 months on new Silverados with over 100 available. And to top it all off, their pricing over 125 vehicles under $20,000. Seriously, Vinny and Herb, can pricing get more affordable?
No. What? I can't imagine that it possibly could.
But wait, there's more.
Oh,
look at that. Get a free oil change at Ray Chevrolet in Fox Lake. When you mention CHGO, a free oil change, all you need to do is mention CHGO when scheduling your oil change. Start off the new year right and schedule it by April 30th. Visit Ray Chevrolet in Fox Lake or raychevrolet.com. They've been serving the community since 1963. Find new roads. And we also want to let you know about our friends over at Prize Picks. I told you on the pregame, it's very easy to make an entry. Less than 60 seconds, I made my entry for Nikola Jokic to score more than a half point and Chris Paddock to have more than 4.5 strikeouts.
Hmm.
Did the Paddock thing hit?
Twice.
Look at that. And I just need Nikola Jokic, NBA MVP, to score a basket. I think it's going to be
not even
fun.
Just a free throw.
That's true. Just a free throw. Look at that. I'm asking for too much. Prize Picks is the largest daily fantasy sports platform in North America. They are the easiest and most exciting way to play DFS. It's just you against the numbers. Instead of battling thousands of other players, including pros and sharks, you pick more than or less than on 2-6 player stat projections and watch the winnings roll in. With spring training over and baseball season officially underway, don't miss your chance to add your favorite players from the diamonds in your prize pick entries, whether it's strikeouts, RBIs, or first inning runs. Take your pick of more than or less than and add them to your Prize Picks entry today, and you have everything to choose from with Prize Picks, from baseball and basketball to League of Legends and everything in between. You can pick from LeBron, Shohei Ohtani, Connor McDavid, and Jude Bellingham, all in the same entry, and you can make these entries in less than 60 seconds. So go check out the fun over at prizepicks.com/CHGO and use code CHGO for a first deposit match up to $100. That's prizepicks.com/CHGO and use code CHGO. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. Okay, so let's go to the game plan thought just real quick. We'll wait. We'll wait. All right, let's get into Jonathan Cannon. Just because we're talking about the kids here, and Cannon pitched tonight.
Yep.
Obviously gave up a lot of earned runs. Not a great outing, but we talked about this with Nastrini yesterday, and I don't feel much differently from Cannon.
you need to be in these situations where you can gain experience and grow. I don't think Cannon had a horrible start. I don't think his stuff is major league ready yet, but I don't mind him pitching in a White Sox uniform. Were there any other big takeaways from Jonathan Cannon's start today?
Not other. I mean, I think you hit it right on the head there, and I would agree with you. I mean, we said basically the same thing when it came to Nastrini yesterday. I mean, listen, it's about finding out for the White Sox whether these guys can be a part of the future, be part of their planning. And even after back-to-back bad starts by both of them, they still don't know. They don't know yet, right?
Correct.
Because each of them had a good start, each of them had a bad start. So you don't know whether these guys can be part of your future or not. That's why you got to give it an entire summer to figure it out. And so seeing Nick Nastrini and Jonathan Cannon pitch on a regular basis and try to navigate major league lineups and try and learn what it's like to become a major league pitcher, even if they're unsuccessful at the end of the day, was a good use of this time because you found out an answer to that question. Chris Flexen, Michael Soroka, even the guy that's coming, Mike Clevenger. These guys aren't going to tell you much, if anything, about your future as an organization. You might learn something. You will learn something, good or bad, if you give those innings to Nastrini and Cannon on a regular basis. So getting, you know, I don't even want to say lit up, but him getting hit around today, I think he gave up 9 hits and didn't even make it out of the fourth inning. Mm-hmm. Is not a bad thing for the White Sox in the grand scheme of things, even if it was a bad thing for Jonathan Cannon today.
Yeah, and like you guys both said, this is as positive as you can be after getting 3 2/3 and giving up, 5 earned runs. He struck out 5, only walked 1. And as Kevin Kugler pointed out multiple times, that he was a strike away from not having any damage in those innings. He started the game off with getting the first two guys off. Getting the first two guys out, and then, you know, walks his only batter of the game in Larnick, and then it just continues there. And then you get a dumb overthrow again from the White Sox in the first inning by Dominic Fletcher, where you get a Jeffers single to center field. The guy who walked, Larnick, goes from first to third, and he's going to make it there. You're in center field, mostly shifted towards right field. Throw the ball into your cutoff man or to second base so you stop that guy from getting into scoring position. And then you see the double right there after that by Max Kepler. Scores both of the guys that preceded him. So not only is Jonathan Cannon supposed to do what he did today, he's supposed to get some help from his defense. That right there sets a bad tone, firstly, for the team not playing right for the second consecutive game. And then also you're getting your pitcher some actual support, because maybe Kepler comes up and hits that double and they only get one run in. You feel a little bit better you get out of that inning with only one run scored. But, you know, I think the guy has to go out and do exactly what he did today for the year. And as you guys said, you'll know some things. The guy who pitched on the other side, Paddock, came into this game with an 8 ERA. Currently, Jonathan Cannon's ERA is lower than that. So you got some room to work with. You saw what that guy did, and I know it's versus the woeful White Sox offense, but they'll be going against teams that are woeful too. Again, so let's do that for the rest of the year with both Nastrini and Cannon. I know that they won't do it because they're going to have other pitchers coming up, mainly like Brad Keller and Mike Clevenger, but I would want this to continue throughout the rest of the year because you need to have some answers on your starting rotation. You can't go into next season like you went into this season with a bunch of question marks. You need some more answers, some exclamation points, so maybe just a period.
Yeah, I mean, at least penned in. I think Nastrini and Cannon are penned into the rotation. I don't think there's anything that
I wouldn't go quite that far. They've made two starts apiece.
But I mean,
they're
already starting in the 2024 White Sox. We think that the 2025 White Sox are going to be that much improved where isn't in the rotation.
If Nastrini and Cannon get the run that they should, maybe one of them proves they shouldn't be in the rotation next year.
I'd be surprised by that, maybe. But I mean, two, I don't think that they're going to be spending money on free agents. So I think even if Cannon has a bad first year, I think there's probably enough runway to give him another year. I mean, no?
I mean, we'll see what happens. I mean, who's to say that three or four other guys make big strides in the minor leagues and are vying for that kind of spot in the rotation come next spring? Who's to say they don't, you know, go out and sign even somebody minor, you know? Who's to say Eric Fetty's not still here? Who's to say Garrett Crochet is still not here? You know what I mean? So I think that there are... There is so much that can happen between now and next spring training. They've only played 22 games. But the idea is you find out the answer to that question
by giving them
some starts.
Absolutely. Let's see the pitching lines for today. Sarah, you flashed those for Cannon. 3 2/3, 6 earned runs, 9 hits, 5 Ks, 1 walk. And then Chris Paddock, 7 innings, no earned runs, 6 hits, 10 Ks, and no walks for Paddock. And then for Cannon, can we see his pitch breakdown, those all of his pitches that he threw today? That's Paddock. I sent another one. Yeah, there we go. Thank you very much, Sarah. 75 pitches for Cannon today. 29 called strikes plus whiff percent. Around 30 is major league average for a starter, so nothing too crazy there. Obviously, he gave up the hits, but it seemed like the Twins had a really good game plan. Anything low that they were going to try to lay off, or if you know they knew it was going to be low, they were really looking for that, you know, anything at the knees. They were looking for anything at the knees, especially after the first inning when they were able to break through a little bit, right? Because Larnick ended up getting a hit in the first inning?
Yeah.
Yeah, because it was 2-0. It seemed like he was mainly sinker changeup, and then he started throwing his cutter a little bit more. His cutter was effective. 3 whiffs on 8 swings, also 5 called strikes. Especially with all the lefties there, I think that's going to be a pitch that's going to need to improve for Cannon. It was his second most used pitch, but there was still a 10% difference between a sinker and cutter. The cutter seems to be a big pitch, at least against lefties. And maybe that four-seam fastball, it wasn't effective. 1 called strike, no whiffs on 5 swings, but still, if they are focusing on pitches lower in the zone, that four-seam fastball thrown with ride up in the zone will hopefully get either weak contact or those swing and misses. So Cannon, I think, had a better start, at least when it comes to called strikes and getting swings and misses. But obviously, the 9 hits and 6 earned runs is nothing to be thrilled about. But I don't think this is the worst start in the world. I'd rather have this than Michael Kopech walking 6 batters, right?
And also, you saw on the broadcast, we're watching the Fox Sports 1 broadcast where AJ Pierzynski was doing the color, and he was like, you see that fastball is non-competitive fastball. He's trying to throw it too hard, and he doesn't trust his stuff to throw it inside because Corey Lee's setting up on the inside, and he's throwing it way off the plate. So I don't know if he was just too nervous to throw a pitch inside versus the Twins or that particular batter in that at-bat. But as we looked at the lineup, there's no one in that lineup, especially today, that you're like, I'm scared of him, except for Edward Julian, which I told you guys about in the pregame. This man always hits home runs versus the White Sox since he's come up. He's a fucking another lefty from the Twins just doing anything. The Larnicks of the world, the Kirilovs of the world, Max Keplers of the world. They just bring up the new lefty, and he does something. I hate him.
I hate him too. Is he French? Can we call him Eduardo?
He's French Canadian.
Okay, all right, yeah. There we go. All right, cool. So yeah, no, Julien. I like it better. You know, it makes him feel dastardly.
He likes mayonnaise on his French fries.
Yeah, see,
He's from
Sarah. Just grimace.
He's from Quebec. He likes gravy Quebec on his French fries.
He's not a big mayonnaise person.
What's that called?
Poutine.
Poutine.
Poutine. Oh, hey, so good.
There you go. And you mentioned that in the second inning. AJ said, sink the ball in at some point. And then Vinny, when you laughed at Ryan Jeffers in the third inning, we saw Cannon get a nice sinker inside. Jeffers basically hit it like in the middle part of the bat, and it was a weak ground out, and it was really nice contact there. So can Cannon replicate this? I think he's what, only 23? So I mean, there's still kind of surprising that he's in the majors at this point. I don't think we were expecting,
what, 2 years ago?
Yeah, in the 22? Third round from Georgia.
Yeah, been quick ascension for him.
But I don't think any of us thought, you know, come April that he would be a major league starter. And obviously the record has dictated that, but it has been, you know, an all right 2 starts. I'm cool with what I'm seeing.
I would just want White Sox fans, would they rather see Cannon Schreedy go out there and do what they've done the last 2 starts, or see combination of Flex and Soroka do what they've done in their starts?
I think
that most people would agree. Like, if we're going to be bad, let's let the youngsters play.
Yeah, after 22 games, I am all for
seeing more Chris Flexen, or no, more Nick Nastrini and Jonathan Cannon than Flexen and Soroka. But as we talked pregame too, Pedro, and we'll get to Nastrini in a second after a break, he's not being sent down because of his performance. He's being sent down to manage the workload. And as we said, the Sox still need, what, 120 more starts made? I think it's just more about, we know Chris Flexen right now is on a major league roster, and if we try to send him off the major league roster, he will likely either get claimed or we'll have to go down to AAA, and then we'll have to add him back to the 40-man, right? There's just this whole song and dance. Right now, Chris Flexen is on your major league team. Nick Nastrini and Jonathan Cannon have those options and will be a part of your major league future for a while. Use Chris Flexen while you have him to try to, you know, get to the middle of May, so you don't have to worry about, you know, six starts that Nastrini or Cannon could be making. It's all about just kind of extending the life of Nastrini and Cannon for 2024. I don't hate the call down, the send down of Nastrini, but I don't know. I don't think I would also love to see Cannon get sent down after this game if they were going to, you know, favor a Flexen, a Clevenger, a Keller, or a Soroka over him.
I hear you. And I know we were talking during the game that Flexen came in the game and he pitched, I think, 25 pitches or more. And he's scheduled to pitch Friday at home.
Pedro's told the folks up in Minnesota, rather, that that is still a possibility. The Flexen could still start on Friday.
28 pitches for Flexen. 28.
So today is theoretically like a bullpen day in between your starts. But so he could probably still has enough bullets. It's three, four days of rest.
Well, and also you can start him Friday with no intention of sending him past three or four innings, too.
Yeah, right. Like, hey, go give us 50 pitches. Tomorrow's going to be Eric Fetty, and then on the 24th, it's going to be Crochet. On that Thursday getaway day, it will be Soroka, and then on the 26th, we assume that it's going to be Chris Flexen. Again, it wasn't too much of a laborious day for Chris Flexen, so maybe, you know, hey, go through the order once and... Thanks so much, Chris Flexen. We appreciate your time. all right, let's take a break. We will let you know about some of our great sponsors, and then we will jump into the Nick Nastrini move, let you know about Danny Mendick coming up, Leonid Sosa going down, and then John Brebbia being activated off the injured list, and Nastrini going back to Charlotte. But Vinny, you want to let us know about some Wisconsin innovation?
The scientists, the mad scientists up north of the border in Wisconsin are always working on the next best thing, whether they're frying up a cheese curd or trying to put an entire water park under a roof. But I think that their best effort yet has been what they've churned out at the Leinenkugel's factory, or what do we call it? The laboratory up there. The Leinie's laboratory, in which they have made a delicious, delicious beer called Summer Shandy. And it is summer now. I don't know if you guys were outside today. It was just an absolutely beautiful day.
Oh, yeah.
Perfect for a Summer Shandy. They took the beer, they took lemonade, they combined them. It's very tasty, and it's perfect for all of your favorite summer activities. Whether you're going to have a lakeside picnic or a rateside tailgate, you're going to need about a good case of Summer Shandy, which you can pick up, of course, at the Jewels or wherever else. But hey, maybe you're like, ooh, Leinie's, intriguing. What else have they churned out up there? What else has come out of the laboratory? You could get yourself a berry vice. You could get yourself a honey vice, which is, of course, made from real Wisconsin honey, real Wisconsin bees, you would assume.
The honey the bees produce. Bees aren't in the product.
No, the real Wisconsin bees. Honey has to come from real Wisconsin bees.
Right.
They're not like going out of state for their bees to then come in and make Wisconsin honey. That, you can't do that.
And there's no bees in the beer.
No, there's no bees in the beer. No. If you open it up, there's no danger of being stung. But there's also Lakeside Cherry. There's Sunset Wheat. There's Leinie's Original if you want to go north of the border as well. It's all very, very good, and you should drink it. Flavor life, simple moments with Leinenkugel's, the official craft beer of the Chicago White Sox. Go to Leinie.com/CHGO to find delivery options near you. That's Leinie.com/CHGO. Or pick up Leinenkugel's pretty much anywhere they sell beer. Leinenkugel's, flavor the moment, celebrate responsibly. The Jacob Leinenkugel Brewing Company, Chippewa Falls.
Yes. Thank you, Vinny. And we also want to let you know about our friends over at CD1 Price Cleaners. Customers save over 30% on their dry cleaning bill by switching to CD1 Price Cleaners. They have a simple and transparent service where other cleaners can charge a different price for every garment, and they'll have upcharges, and you may pay a different price each time you visit. At CD1 Price Cleaners, they keep things simple. There's one price. It's in the name. They charge one low price for any garment, even those pesky sports jerseys you spilled mustard on. The same one low price for every garment. And they offer a fast turnaround. CD1 Price Cleaners has your order ready the same or next day, and other cleaners take 2 to 4 days to have your clean garments ready. You'll get a text alert from CD1 Price Cleaners when your order is ready for pickup, and they offer a wide variety of services like dry cleaning. They'll wash and fold your laundry. They'll wash those pesky blankets and comforters. They'll tailor and alter your clothing, and they'll also clean any leather you have or some area rug cleaning. I know Jerry Reinsdorf has a nice leather jacket he usually busts out. I think he probably goes to CD1 Price Cleaners, gets that one low price, and you know, gets that thing looking spiffy and clean to go ask for $1 billion from the state. Hey, isn't that a fun day? Visit chgo.cd1one.com. The link is also in the description. And once you're there, you can pick up from an in-store coupon or online pickup and delivery coupon options. Again, go to chgo.cdone.com. The link is in the description, and you can go check out the coupon options that CD1 Price Cleaners is offering to you, the CHGO listener, over there at the link in the description.
Over by there.
Over by there. Sarah also saying, how many people are watching? 160? What?
We had 168. Now there's 152, but only 44 likes.
Yeah, what's going on there?
Still doesn't make sense.
Does not make sense. 152 minus 44 is, why did I do math?
Math.
90.
Because you're the math guy here.
Let me type that into Google.
It'd be 108.
52 minus 44. Sorry, my brain's not working that slow. It's 108. Did you say that?
I did.
Okay. 108 people, so I'm expecting 108 likes to just simply pop up. Do you guys have a favorite 44 in White Sox history?
Toby Hall?
Yeah. Was Dan Pascal 44?
Toby Hall was, and Dan Pascal was. So there you go. You guys are going 2 for 2. So is Ruben Sierra? Corky Miller, and the last 44 was Sebi Zavala. So appreciate that. Thank you guys for getting us over those 50 likes, and make sure you're hitting that thumbs up button if you haven't yet. All right, before the game, Danny Mendick was called up. Zach Remillard was DFA'd. Lenin Sosa heads down to Charlotte. Those are the hitter moves. And then Nick Nastrini is sent down to Charlotte as John Brebbia is activated off the IL. We talked about this pregame. I think there was initially, even for myself, a lot of frustration with the Nastrini move, but after Pedro talked, and I think after you look at the 26-man roster, you said, who else are you going to send down?
Yeah, I mean, he explained it to the folks up in Minnesota as, you know, he had options, and he's a young guy, and you can send him down to the minors and bring him right back when, you know, after 15 days are up, and I think that's just what it ends up being. I mean, John Brebbia is a guy who is supposed to be one of the more important relievers in the White Sox bullpen. You obviously want him in there. It's a series in Minnesota in which you only need 4 starting pitchers. Here's Mike Clevenger making his way toward this major league team as well. So I don't think Nick Nastrini is going anywhere because of what he did in his outings, in his 2 outings here since making his major league debut. I think it's just a reality of the roster and you know, working out the roster to make sure that the pitchers who are here are the ones that the White Sox need. Nick Nastrini will obviously be back. It's just right now, it was easy to send him down. If they wanted to, if they were looking elsewhere, Jordan Leisure has options, but he's one of your best relievers right now, right? I mean, and Cannon pitching tonight. So Dominic Leone, if you got to get rid of him, you got to DFA him. You can't use him again anymore. If it's Davey Garcia, you got to DFA him. You can't have him on the team anymore. This is a way to keep everybody in house. And like I said, Nick Nastrini, and like Pedro said today, we'll be back.
Yeah, he said it perfectly. That's exactly what Nastrini is down in the minor leagues for. He'll be probably back up when the opportunity arises, because I'm sure the White Sox think the same way that all of us think, that he didn't do anything in his 2 starts that deserves a demotion. Just the circumstances called for it, bringing John Brebbia up. So I'll see him in the 15 days that he has to sit down there in Charlotte. Hopefully it's called up immediately after that. But we also know that eventually Mike Clevenger will be called up to this team. And I expect that probably in the next month. So it might be a little bit longer for either Cannon or Nastrini to get more regular starts.
Yeah, and it does seem, too, that Clevinger's obviously in the wings waiting, and it seems like Brad Keller's in the wings waiting. So maybe you see what you have from Clevinger and Keller up until July, and I don't think it will take Nastrini that long to get back up on the Major League roster, but you're going to give Keller and Clevinger some sort of run. Maybe if Soroka continues to falter, maybe if Flexen continues to falter, Nastrini can come up and fill those spots. But it does seem like the White Sox are trying to win some games. I know that might be difficult to believe, but I think the reason why they're doing this is, like the Tommy Pham, the Danny Mendick, the Clevinger, the Keller, they're trying to get as many people who have been there before, who have dealt with the ups and downs of baseball and might not stare at a 13-19 record.
3-19.
And he gave us 10 more wins.
Yeah.
They got about to rip off a streak?
Get no, hotter than no. shit and still be 13-19?
No. Seriously. I mean, they could win what? 16 straight games?
And still be 500.
God.
Let's do it.
Yeah, let's do it.
Hell.
But yeah, no, just disgusting to watch. And I think they're just trying to get some sort of competency, if possible, on this baseball team, which isn't wrong. And I think Nastrini, maybe it wasn't the right time to call him up, but also they were fairly desperate to call somebody up.
Maybe.
To make starts.
But I'm thinking also, like you just were alluding to, that Chris Getz, Pedro Grifol, Ethan Katz, Brian Bannister, they're all looking at this record. That record reflects on them, too. And so calling up more veteran pitchers probably helps them out a little bit more because, you know, those guys might convert those losses that Nastrini and Cannon would have into victories, especially Clevinger, who didn't pitch poorly last year. And Brad Keller's been a major league pitcher. He's been falling on hard times the last couple years, but this is a Brian Bannister reclamation project that he wants to get back to his old early Kansas City Royals days. So I'm thinking that, yes, I would love the youngsters to pitch, but those guys might think a different way where they're tumbling towards a record, terrible record for the season. These other pitchers can give them more MLB like starts instead of what Nastrini and Cannon gave them their last starts out. And they're probably thinking that's more the regular than the first starts that they had where they didn't really give up anything.
Well, I can assure you that the folks in charge want to win.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? I'm sure that everything you said, Sean, about trying to get some guys in here who can help the fortunes go in the other direction, even the slightest bit, would be valuable to them. That being said, I mean, like, why though? I mean,
I know what you're saying.
You don't want to go the whole season and only win 15 games. I understand, but but I just go back to, what does Brad Keller do for the future of this team? What does Mike Clevinger do for the future of this team?
Nothing.
Nastrini and Cannon do something.
Mm-hmm.
Even if they go out and get rocked every day, you're like, okay, well, it's not those guys.
Yeah.
And here's the thing. Rick Hahn always used to put it this way when we would ask questions about when is player X coming up from the minor leagues. He said, we, the White Sox, want to wait until a guy can not just survive but thrive in the major leagues. Assuming that they're operating under the same general idea, if Nick Nastrini and Jonathan Cannon are ready for the major leagues, why do they have to go back down? Why is it then more important to get Brad Keller or Mike Clevinger up here? I mean, I know Mike Clevinger's coming. They signed him to a major league contract.
Right.
But there's no need for Brad Keller to be at the major league level for this team.
None.
Go ahead and keep him in AAA, mm-hmm. and guys are going to get hurt, and you can call him up when you need him.
I agree, but again, I mean, Chris Getz's plan that he said when he was put into the spot wasn't, you know, we're going to have Brad Keller be our fifth starter and see if we can flip him at the deadline, right? It was, this is the elephant in the room, and we're going to try to be competitive. And I think that's just the biggest reason why Brad Keller and Mike Clevinger are here, is just because I don't think the White Sox fully capitalize on their offseason plan, and I don't think the White Sox put out a team that was truly good enough to compete, even in that lowly AL Central. And I think it's just this lineup. I don't think that they thought that this lineup could be this bad. I mean, even if Brad Keller goes out there and gives you 5 innings of shutout ball, will the White Sox have the lead? Could the White Sox bullpen hold on to the lead? I mean, the starting pitching's probably been out of the relief pitching, defense, starting pitching, and hitting. It's probably been the best unit.
Yes.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe. Not really.
Yeah. Maybe.
It's not been good.
It's all been horrible. They're 3-19.
Well, I would say it's either them or the relief pitching. The pitching has been better than the position players, without a doubt, I think, yeah.
Right. But, I mean, even then, you got Kopech, who's, you know, been great, and then he comes in and gets Salvador Perez and throws a fastball right down the middle. So it never feels like they can win. All right, let's talk a little bit then about why don't the kids play, because that's been thrown out in the chat before. I saw that on Twitter as well. Why not just go full in to Cannon and Nastrini? There's also Colson Montgomery, who Ted Williams is bringing up in the chat. Is that the real Ted Williams?
I don't think so.
Okay. And then Drew Thorpe as well. Like, those feel like the guys that would be coming up are Thorpe, Colson, Nastrini, and Cannon this year. Because even Cannon was a bit of a surprise. Like, it just doesn't feel like there are young guys truly pushing to come up right now.
Well, but that goes back to what I was just talking about, right? Like, player development in the minor leagues is part of this too. Mm-hmm. And if they don't think Colson Montgomery is ready for prime time, don't bring him up yet, right? If they don't think that, I mean, Drew Thorpe is pitching at Double A, right? Yep. Like, if they don't think that he's ready, if they want him to go play Triple A before playing the major leagues, by all means do that. It's not, you don't have to go all or nothing. You don't have to say, well, it should be either be all prospects or you should be trying to win every game with veterans. If this truly is a rebuilding process in which they are building for the future, we all went through the last one. Mm-hmm. They need to let the prospects cook in the minor leagues for a while, right? But if there are guys that they do determine are ready, then let them play Major League Baseball. If they have determined they're not ready, let them play minor league baseball. It's not that, okay, they're 3-19, call up Montgomery. Like, Montgomery needs to do things at AAA that they have set out for him, and he needs to get that checklist all crossed off before he can come up to the major leagues. And that's fine. Just because they're 3-19 doesn't mean that you need to call up Montgomery before he's ready. Mm-hmm. But if there are guys who are ready, who you determine are ready, learn something about your future rather than continuing to lose with guys who won't be here next year.
Yeah, and I think you could lose the player for the future if you bring him up too early.
Absolutely.
And yeah. So don't have Colson Montgomery. I mean, we're talking last year. I know they're two different ages and two different people about Oscar Colas. He was brought up, I thought, a little earlier, and the White Sox didn't. They thought he was ready to go after a dominant season down in AAA or AA and a little of AAA. I thought he should have been a whole year down there in AAA. They brought him up early, first month, fall on his face, sent him back down. Did the same thing back in AAA, gained his composure, got back up here, sent him back down here. I don't want that to happen to Colson Montgomery. When he's up here, you're here. That's it. Your development in the minor leagues is over. Now you're a major leaguer. That's what I want. You see right now, I don't know what he's going through right now, but Jackson Holliday is going through some struggles. That will happen with a young player no matter what because they're going up a level. You don't want to have both him struggling, the team struggling, and his confidence waning going into next year and then thinking, can I really do this? And then the development kind of stopping at the major league level and then him being lost cause. I mean, you see what Andrew Vaughn is now. I don't know if that's a product of him not getting enough time, but his progression has not gone up. It's just stopped and then fallen off the table right now.
The idea, at least in my mind, when the team is not in a contending mode, is ignore the situation at the major league level and focus on the individual player. When the individual player is ready for the major leagues, put them on the team. Because, you know, it's not like anybody's blocking or anybody that is here for the long term is blocking Colson Montgomery. Mm-mm. You're not going to say, oh, well, Colson, you're ready to go, but we got Paul DeJong, so you got to wait until the beginning of next year. And that's not to rip Paul. It's just saying, like, he is not part of the long-term plan. So I think that they have to take this on a case-by-case basis. It is nothing to do with what the record is at the major leagues. It has nothing to do with who's there because there's so many people at the major league level right now who aren't going to be here. Focus on these individual players and make sure their development goes the way that you want it to go, not the way that the situation at the big league level is dictating that maybe it should go.
And you brought up Vaughn, 7 for his last 67.
Oof.
Robbie Grossman, I believe, is 2 for his last 16. What's the Robbie Grossman's a little less worse.
What do you think the kids?
I think mainly, you look at their current prospect list and it's so pitching heavy. I don't mind testing pitchers out a little bit earlier than they should be, because I think those are guys that can bounce back a little bit more. If you're making 31 starts and one of them's bad, I think it's easy just to kind of, you know, put that out of your mind. And two, with some of these guys, especially Cannon, you could see it with his pitch mix, you're looking for a lot of ground balls. You would rather have the improved defense and professional defenders behind him, like Nicky Lopez and Paul DeJong and Danny Mendick, etc., rather than Colson Montgomery, who might not even be a shortstop at the major league level, you know, fielding those ground balls. So I don't care in some situations, but for hitters, I'm all for make sure these guys are 100% ready before you call them up. I know Edgar Caro is mashing in double A. Let him destroy double A. Let him pound that into just dust and sand until you call him up to triple A. I mean, we saw his struggles when he first got called up to double A, and he was a 20-year-old trying to figure it out. Seems like now he's figured out that level. Let him gain a ton of confidence and feel like he's been down there for too long rather than calling up him up too early. So I'm with you guys. We are at 67 likes. That throws me off. I was going to say shout out Kelly Wunsch. How about shout out Sammy Peralta? Huh?
It's always a good idea to shout out Kelly Wunsch.
Yeah.
Is that 65?
Yeah, it's 65. You got any more 65s?
There was another pitcher I missed. I have it in my head. When you say it, I'm going to be pissed.
There's
David
one.
Axelrod.
No, not Axelrod. There's one from 2012 to 2019.
Long time, White Sox.
Oh, Nate Jones.
Nate Jones, former All-Star.
Longest tenured White Sox at the time. He was here.
Is it really?
The last couple of years.
He's and the the Michael Kopech of
and
this.
And Lurie took over, I think, eventually.
Yes. Love Leury Garcia. All right. Let's get into some manager/owner talk. Let's first start off with the owners. The Bears announced today that on the 24th, they will be announcing the plans for a stadium on the lake at their current location that will be publicly funded, and there will be some a bit of contribution from the McCaskey family to build this stadium. And then there was a article released by Crane's Chicago Business from my guy, now I'm forgetting his name,
Greg Hintz,
thank you very much, where they talked about Jerry Reinsdorf and how he fits into this. It seems like the Bears will likely be getting public money from the state and or the city to build this. I don't know if that's been fully confirmed yet, but with them saying it's going to be a publicly funded stadium, I think that's a pretty good sign. But anyways, there's an article on Cranes about Jerry, and I think the biggest thing that sticks out is the end part where it says there's no plans for the White Sox to sell the team, but Jerry indicated that his son might sell after he dies unless the team has a long-term Chicago lease. So, and also in that article, Jerry said that he never said that there would not be a White Sox investment in a new property, saying that he would put towards $200 million to build the stadium or at least the surroundings of the 78 neighborhood. What do we make of this? Does this open the door a little bit for the Nashville White Sox?
I mean, if it does, it does. I don't care. But the stadium that he wants to build at the 78 is projected to cost like $1.2 billion. And he's like, yeah, I'm going to throw in $200 million. Come on, man. You little chump change. I don't need that. Throw in all of it or most of it. At least the Bears are going half and half with the city. If that goes into fruition, I don't like it. I don't like spending money on billionaire stadiums. But at least they're putting some contribution there. And it could be right back into the city. But we all know.
Correct me if I'm wrong, though. The projected costs of the football stadium means that even though the Bears are, this is all suggested, I believe, yes, but suggesting to pay for half of it, it's still twice as much as the state would have to pay for the baseball stadium.
Correct.
Because it's a $4 billion football stadium versus a $1 plus billion baseball stadium.
Correct.
Yeah.
And I think that, be real, like, the Bears are Chicago. Like, if you're a Chicagoan, they're the number one team that moves the market, and the Bears' needle's pointing up. The fact that the White Sox are owned by Jerry Reinsdorf and are historically bad are really bad time to ask the public for extra money. So I'm always no extra money, no money from us taxpayers, and it's especially bad right now, where at the end of the paragraph, Jerry's like, we can't play at Guaranteed Rate Field. As if that stadium's crumbling. As if that stadium's not pretty decent. It's a really nice stadium. Not around the league. It's not up there. But it's a stadium that you can live with for another 30 years and just have no problems with. He is talking out of his ass, trying to get more money out of the state that he doesn't deserve. And so I'm always thumbs down on him getting money. Now, the Bears, they're a better entity than the White Sox. So I think eventually they'll acquiesce, the public will acquiesce, and he'll have a stadium on the lake there for the Bears. But I think the White Sox acted too long, and now the Bears are back in the city. I don't think it will be both. Like, you can't have public money for both the Bears and the White Sox coming from the taxpayers. It'll be really tough to have.
No, and two, as Jerry Reinsdorf says, you know, he'll be putting $200 million towards that, but then also the ISFA will be the owner of the newly built stadium, which is a agency that Jerry Reinsdorf, he helped develop. Okay, and Jerry Reinsdorf is also very close with the people at the ISFA to the point where you look at the amount that he has taken out, the amount of money that he has taken out of the public fund, the ISFA fund, compared to the money that he's actually put into a stadium. The public money that he's used to rebuild, revamp that current stadium that's breaking down and falling apart that they can't make any money from, it outweighs what other owners are using from their public state agencies that they set up to build stadiums. Like, Jerry Reinsdorf is taking from the public pot and giving nothing in. And he is just trying to take. And it's disgusting. I'm not excited for this. And there was an article written by Melissa Isaacson, is that her name, formerly of ESPN, yeah, from 2013, where Jerry Reinsdorf said that he lightheartedly wants to live until 2033, which is the 100th year anniversary of Major League Baseball's All-Star Game, which was first hosted at Comiskey Park. He's trying to see it in 2033. He's trying to see that 100th game, 100th All-Star Game at his brand new stadium. We'll see if it happens. I am not excited for it, and I think that the Bears clearly mean more to this town than the Sox do, and I just don't see that money getting through, even though the White Sox were apparently, according to George McCaskey, a part of their plan and their pitch to Chicago that, you know, hey, if we're getting X amount of money, we want the White Sox to get Y amount of money. And I don't know if that's going to come to fruition, but I think with Greg Hines putting out that article, it shows that the White Sox likely won't be getting any public money. All right. Any final things?
No, this is very depressing that the White Sox are this bad, but I want them to continue to be this bad because if you're going to be bad, make history.
Right. If it's going to be this bad, it might turn exciting at some point. I mean, you're like, wow, look, final days are coming up, and they might not beat the 1961 Mets record.
I mean, when we're telling our grandkids about the White Sox and how we covered them, wouldn't it be better to say, yeah, we covered the worst team in Major League Baseball history for a full year, mm-hmm, instead of we covered a 57-win White Sox team? Like, who cares? That's terrible. You covered a 61-win White Sox team the year before. Yeah. So be bad. Be the worst. Be going for that Mets record or the Tigers record.
Three bright-eyed, bushy-tailed White Sox, CHGO White Sox podcasters in 2022 thought they were going to be covering a 93-win team.
Oh, my God.
Defending AL champions. And anyways, that's Vinny Duber, our CHGO White Sox beat writer. You can follow him at Vinny Duber.
What's that called? The monkey's paw? Where you wish for something then it's just bad?
Right. Yeah. I hope the White Sox win a World Series. Okay. That will happen in 2133. Have fun waiting out those 130-something years.
It could... 2133. Why not shoot for 2112? It could be the Rush World Series.
That's true. Yeah. Hey, 2112.
And Bruce Miles will be there.
Bruce Miles?
Bruce Miles is the biggest Rush fan I know.
Oh, okay. That's Herb Lawrence. You can follow him at HectorBall23. He's our CHGO White Sox community leader. You can follow me at Sean_W_Anderson. Thank you to Sarah for producing the show, and I think it's fitting that we end with 78 likes. Goodbye.
Y'all silly like the mayor.